Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
Doing great. Well, nice to see you again.
Yeah, good to see you again too, Mark. Welcome to the Big Unlock podcast. As you might be aware, you know, Paddy used to do these, and I'm continuing, you know, after that. We are up to in the 150 to 160 range in terms of number of episodes now. So it's going pretty good. And I'll do a quick intro for myself, then I'll request you to introduce yourselves as well. I'm Rohit Mahajan. I'm the managing partner and CEO at Demo Consulting and Bigrio. And Mark, please go ahead and introduce yourself with the audience.
Yeah, thank you. I've been on once before. It's been probably 3 years with Paddy. It was a great time. So I appreciate you guys having me back. Yeah, so I'm Mark Weissman. I am the Chief Information Officer as well as the Chief Medical Information Officer at Tidal Health. We're on the Eastern Shore of Maryland. We are a 2, soon to be 3 hospital system, and we take care of the big chunk of the Eastern Shore. So it's a great place to be. Ocean City, Maryland is probably one of the areas that people may be most familiar with in this area. Yeah, thanks for having me on. I look forward to talking about, particularly around digital engagement, because that is one of the areas which I love to bring forth to our organization and help our patients and clinicians interact.
That's awesome, Mark. So could you please share with us that how did you get started? What attracted you to the healthcare industry segment and your role? How did it change over the years? So please share the story.
Yeah, sure. So I started as a doctor, if you go back to that beginning. And actually, I started as a paramedic and a firefighter. That was how... When I was much younger and much stronger, I was involved with volunteer fire and rescue and really loved it. But I really loved the medical side of it and then went on to medical school and at some point got involved in primary care and getting into data and analytics and quality measures is really where I got my start. I started moving over once I saw how dirty the data was and how much help we needed. I got more into the informatics side and eventually led to my role as a CMIO and then the CIO. And I love being the CIO and the CMIO. I get to use my medical knowledge and bring the technology knowledge and say, all right, how do we make the technology blend into the background for the clinicians and for the patients as much as possible so that let the people interact? That's what we want. We want those interactions. We want people who are spending time on the harder level things, let machines do easy, repetitive, boring things, mm-hmm. so that the clinicians can really focus on the important stuff and the patients as well. So that's how I got my start. It was really around data analytics and then more into the technology.
That is so interesting that you have both the perspectives and you are able to kind of wear both the hats in the same organization and add so much value to the patient care. So, Mark, what do you think about, like you said, dirty data? That is something that caught my attention. How do you get from dirty data to clean data?
Yeah, good luck. Well, but mostly, I think the most effective way has been getting operational leaders to look at the data. Until they can touch and feel and see and go, oh, that particular data point is wrong because we don't do it that way. We do this other thing on the floor. And when you do it that way, the measurement is just totally wrong. So, like, without that operational engagement, I know a lot about healthcare, but I can't know everything about how every different unit does it differently. And neither can Epic or Cerner or Meditech or whichever. The data will always be dirty in healthcare until the operational leaders sit down, look at their data, engage with it, use it to make operational decisions, and then challenge it and say, this just doesn't feel right. Like, there's no way our time to seeing the patient is that wrong. Well, it's because of the workflow. It's not capturing something. And until you do the workflow, the way the designers were made the program to capture it, the data will be dirty. So healthcare is loaded with data, dirty data. It's just the nature of the beast.
Yeah. And I quite agree with you. And this is very interesting perspective. You said that operational people need to look at it. How do you do that at an enterprise scale, Mark, both from the people perspective and the technology perspective, if you can give some insights into that?
Yeah, our HR department authorized me to use tasers. because it's really effective on operational leaders. It's the only thing that gets them to look at their data. So it is a challenge. One of the things that we're an Epic shop, and the Epic Slicer Dicer is their self-service analytics tool. And it really is easy. Now, people are terrified of it at first. They're intimidated. But once you get them to sit down and play with it a little bit, a proportion, maybe it's 5, 10% of the operational leaders will go, okay, I can use this tool and I can explore the data and start to ask questions and then sit with an analyst and say, show me where this came from. And then we start to realize, oh, how we're capturing it. That little flow sheet row isn't doing what we thought it should do. The only way it works is if the senior leaders ask for data. If they ask data-driven questions, then their directors and managers will go out and try to look at the data. Otherwise, they do what they do today and don't make data-driven decisions. It has to come from the top, and you have interested people who are willing to explore and experiment with data, and then you'll start to see the ball move slowly. It is a journey. There's nothing quick about this.
Absolutely. And what are your thoughts, Mark, around data governance? How did you put a structure to, even though you mentioned Epic, I think, how do you put a structure on the data governance piece of it?
I don't want to mislead anyone to think that I have mastered this by any means. Okay, let's be realistic here.
Yes.
But we have been trying for years to put in place the basics of data governance, particularly the operational data governance. I happen to have an excellent partner in finance. Her name's Kathy. She's wonderful because she's very data-driven and knows the value of data governance and how the Wild West happens and people start showing data that's not a finance approved, particularly finance. It's the data, the numbers, and they're data-driven. They deal with numbers all day. She's really been a strong proponent for pushing it forward. And I partner with her and we're trying to get the definitions just for the major projects that are going on in the organization today. What are you measuring? How do you know if the project's successful? That's where we start and say, okay, you've got this in your head about what makes it successful. What's the definition of that? And we're starting to collect these definitions. It's one of these things, you just get started. That's the key piece. Start somewhere. And then we started to figure out, you know what, how we're collecting that information. And okay, it's taking too long. We need data stewards who are closer to the data, and the roles start to develop and it starts to snowball. We're still pretty raw at this, but I can see that it's starting. It's at least making the baby steps. For so long, we've just said, anyone who wants data gets data and can present it in any way they want. And we occasionally have been bitten by that. And we do find that putting some structure, finding the champions, those who are passionate about it, is where it starts. Our population health team is also very good. So we've started with some initiatives with them. And there's some other areas of the organization that are not good. I'm not starting with them. I'll go back. Let's prove how this works in certain silos. And then we'll work that.
Right. And Mark, we were talking before about some new Epic tools that are very easy to use and very simple in terms of standing them up for patient engagement. Would you like to share some of those experiences?
There's a new tool that's out. Again, we're an Epic shop. And so anytime I'm starting to play with a new tool, I like to talk about it, especially if my colleagues get interested in these things. This new tool is called MyChart Builder. And what it enables us to do is to build a very simple one-page microsite. It's a very static page. It might have a link or a phone number in it for people to take a call to action. But for instance, we have a new rheumatologist who just joined our organization. Well, maybe people who have rheumatologic diseases would want to know about that. So rheumatology is severely underserved in our area, as in most areas. So we're lucky that we have a new one. So I can now put in my chart a link that says, we have a new rheumatologist, but only present it to those where it makes sense. Using the medical knowledge that we have that's in Epic, I can say, look, knowing that this doctor only sees people over 18, don't show it to a 17-year-old. Show it to those who are eligible to see this kind of doctor. It's that kind of tool where we can start to use this vast repository of data that we have and actually use it to bring good education to patients. I should be showing diabetic education to diabetics, not those with some other disease. And so we can now do that. And what's nice is that we can do this in IT. we took some of the templates to marketing and branding and said, look, this, you know, I know you're the logo we need to use. This is what it's going to look like. And we take that. So when we're building our microsite, it's just these templates. That branding center gives us the colors we use. But once that's set up, now IT can spin up a page in a matter of 20 minutes. It's a drag and drop website designer. I don't know if anyone's ever built a Wix website or one of those. It's that simple. It's these are drag and drop and repetitive templates that you can reuse. And all of a sudden, you've got some quick and easy tools to deploy that patients are now engaging with. And you get some analytics on that using Slicer Dicer. You can go in and see patients are clicking on it when I set up this way. They're not clicking on it when I did this other thing. You try to get some A-B testing going in some way. Yeah. It's wonderful to see the patients engage with some of the tools that were early. This has been out. It's probably been out about 6 months now. We just picked it up probably within the last month or so.
I see.
We're starting to put these in place and we're just experimenting with a handful of them. But I can see this being really valuable in terms of lung cancer screening. Well, let's just put that in front of those who qualify for the screening and don't put the information in front of those who don't. So stuff like that, it's going to be really powerful.
That's good to know. So which are some of the other areas of either patient care or technology at the intersection, Mark, that you're super excited about, that you see it coming down the pipeline, or any of the new digital initiatives that you're kind of thinking about?
I think most CIOs are now focusing on virtual nursing and how to scale that. Most of us have done the pilots now.
Yeah.
It's a good thing. The nurses do seem to be responding well to it. The technology is in the room. They're not bothered by it. The big brother's watching me. No, it's here. This is tools that are here to help you. And then the AI we can start to bring. Now that we have cameras and microphones going into the rooms, now we can start to bring AI to bear to say, hey, this patient's moving out of the bed. And the AI is detecting that. Right now, we have humans staring at screens, like little Hollywood Square screens, 18 screens that they're just staring at going, okay, is this patient moving? And it's like, our fall rate didn't get any better. It's a very repetitive, boring job. Computers do those well. So let's let the computer do that work. And then it sets off an alert and lets someone know this patient has moved out of a threshold of what we said was safe, and now bring the human into the loop and try to correct them and or go to the bedside. This kind of technology is possible now because we're investing really in virtual nursing. And oh, by the way, there's this AI that's going to come with it that I'm looking forward to working with these AI models and starting to deploy. So I think that's a great area that most CIOs are now starting to play in, is the virtual nursing and then all the benefits that come from that.
So any other aspects of Epic or any other tools that you are using, Mark, in your health system that are more kind of driven by the new technologies, which is generative AI? Any thoughts on that?
We all talk about generative AI and some of the use cases. Some are panning out, some maybe not so much. But what we have been talking about in our organization is about the education that we need to do about large language models, how they work, and where they can be good and where they may not be great, and where how it could lead a doctor astray. We have some doctors who are very seasoned and very experienced, who I think are wonderful candidates to use a large language model because they'll know when it's wrong. We have some new trainees who are willing and able and eager to start using artificial intelligence with large language models, but I'm not sure we quite trust them yet to know enough about medicine, to be enough of a subject matter expert to go, that's not feeling right. That's just, you got to have that intuition and that experience to know. So the sweet spot for who is willing and eager and engaged to use artificial intelligence, which is usually not my most seasoned physician, and yet I've got my very junior physicians who are ready to use it, who maybe are not quite ready. Like, we've got to watch and see how that plays out. But we are exposing them to it. We are teaching them about it. I think that is essential from where we are right now. And as we start to have the microphones in the exam rooms, and as we're recording all of these conversations with our patients, now putting that into large language models and say, what's the differential diagnosis? What's the next best test to order that's cost effective? That is coming. We're not there yet, but I get a transcript today. I could copy and paste the transcript into a Microsoft Copilot, is the one that we happen to have sitting around, but any of them could probably do it. And you could start to ask questions of the large language models about that data.
Yeah.
And that's interesting. I mean, this will happen automatically for us in the future, not yet.
Yeah, that's good to know. It's very interesting, the thought that you mentioned about the domain knowledge being able to spot, you know, the sweet spot of the LLMs, you know, whether it's saying the right thing or not from a domain knowledge perspective.
I could ask the large language model to develop this wonderful Python program for me, but yeah. I'm really not that good. I don't have the subject matter expertise to know if what it's producing is going to launch a rocket or if it's going to serve me breakfast or what this program is going to do. So you should have some domain expertise when you're playing with a large language model. It doesn't replace. Not yet. That's true.
Which are the other areas of interest, Mark, like on the innovation side of things? How does one innovate in a health system like yours? How do you encourage innovations with physicians or with nurses or other staff? How do you bring in outsiders, like perhaps third-party startups, into your ecosystem? Any thoughts on that or any advice for such like innovation?
It's challenging. I would consider us an academic community hospital system.
Right.
Right. So we've got residents and medical students and fellows, but yet we are not working with biotech startups as a rule. That's not, if we're bringing in new tech, it's because we think it's going to help solve one of our problems and that we see that it's valuable. Maybe it's a startup. And there's definitely room for startups. I surveyed my IT team. I encourage all CIOs to do this. Ask your teams how many failures are you allowed to have this year? Are you allowed to have, and some people will say zero. And you know, those are my network guys. And I'm like, I love them. Like, yes, correct. You are correct. There should be zero failures on the network, but there should be areas where we're okay with experimenting. And even if that is a network, what if we try in a certain software-defined wide area network rather than our traditional MPLS? And what if we tried it? And what if we get some experience with it? And what if it does fail and it's a small clinic? Like, there won't be any dead bodies stacking up in the hallway because we tried something like that. And so that risk tolerance from our teams, it was very variable. I would say most IT people more on the conservative side.
Favoring no failures.
One, they see it as a waste of time, a waste of money. They could have been doing other things that were successful. Yet I do try to push our team to say, let's try this thing. It may not work. I have had my share of failures working with a startup, and it's okay. It just, the particular tool in mind, finance didn't like it. Okay. So they said, look, they're not comfortable. We stopped. We had invested some time and energy into the tool. I believe the tool will be very successful one day. It just won't be successful with us. And that's just, sometimes you got to take your loss and move on as the CIO. And look, there's plenty of projects to do. Never a problem. So my advice to other CIOs, one is to assess your risk tolerance. See, if you have a team that says, absolutely, we never will fail, then you're going to have trouble being extremely innovative. On the other hand, if you do have some who are willing to play, trying to innovate in a space with daily operations ongoing is going to be very difficult. You've got to find a way of carving it out, isolating it, protecting it, giving it a safe space. And that has been very difficult to do in a community health setting. Even with the academic side, where there's a desire for research and innovation, it's still challenging to get daily operations to accept something new coming in and just being a pilot.
Understand. So Mark, as we are coming up towards the end of the conversation on this podcast, what are some of your broad thoughts, or what do you see in the crystal ball for the next, let's say, 1 to 3 years in your healthcare setting?
I see some movement toward the cloud, and it really should start to accelerate. The data center is, in our particular case, has some weaknesses that would be expensive for us to fix. And maybe if I'm going to build another data center, really, maybe AWS or Azure does it better than I do. So I'm pretty sure of that, actually. So we're starting to explore that. And I think we're probably with the middle of the pack in this regard. I think there are the cutting edge, Dr. Shafiq Robinson, who's already gone all in AWS, and will tell you all about the wonderful things that he's done, putting Epic in there and his whole data center. And and others like Centera have done that. They've gone all Azure, but we're getting like our teams are there now mentally. They're like, yes, this does make some sense for us to do. It's a new skill set to learn. I think that's an exciting piece. And then the pieces that come along with that of, okay, our ability to start to use data in different ways because we have more computing power. And if we wanted to start using our own large language model,
yes,
I don't know that we will. If you're talking 3 years out,
yeah, of course,
we should be thinking what sets us up to participate and play in the game with others. Yeah. Otherwise, we're left behind.
That makes sense. That makes sense. So thank you, Mark. This was wonderful. And really appreciate your thoughts, advice, and suggestions. And hoping that we'll have another session.
Yeah, it's always wonderful being on the show. I enjoyed the conversation. It's easy flowing. The time flew. I can't believe we're done. But if you ever need me back, you just let me know. If people want to reach out to me, I am on LinkedIn. That's probably the best way to reach me.
That's fantastic.
Thank you.